All right, J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Let's welcome to the discussion our TSN hockey insider, none other than Dave Poulin, a presentation always, as always, of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
I'm doing very well, gentlemen, and you are correct about the moments, but I'm going to add one moment to that, and that's the moment after the game on Saturday night when the family guys in that locker room, the guys that have kids, realize that Sunday is Christmas tree day, and it is going to be a great Christmas tree day because that's the day that you got to go get the tree. Okay, it's next week, you travel on Saturday, you play Monday. The following week, you play Saturday and Sunday. This is going to be Christmas tree day. And early in the month, you know, when I retired, my kids, my oldest two were nine. So it was a big day. It was a big day. And imagine going to get your tree that day, all the guys in the room that have kids, and feeling like you do after those two wins. It's just the best at this time of year.
And how good did it feel, Pooley, just to kind of satisfy the fans? They hadn't been great at home, and Saturday, great energy and entertaining game.
The entertainment factor alone in that game, the ebbs and flows, and the guys, the key guys. I mean, this has been a little bit now over the last few games. I talked, I think it was after the L.A. game when Brady Tkachuk fought through that Blake Lizotte on that first goal on the faceoff, and just how Brady was elevating his play to a level that, you know, quite frankly, offensively, guys, I don't think a lot of people thought he had this kind of offensive upside. I really don't. And everybody knew he was going to be a good player. Everybody knew he brought an element. But the offensive upside is just remarkable and continues to bring it. And the element that he brings, the Trouba moment on Friday night was special, but so was the entire game on Saturday. And you're getting it from both sides. You talk about Brady, and I'll come right back with Giroux and say, that's the contribution you need. You need everybody to be involved. And that was, you know, as a penalty killer, that penalty killing, that's my vote just on the strength of I'm a penalty killer. And watching that penalty kill and the desperation, because that's the word that is necessary in a penalty kill like that as it progresses. I mean, you talk about selling out. You're selling out every single shot. And you know, in the 4-on-3, and you know that puck is coming and you've got no choice, you've got to be there. But just all the way around, I thought the contribution from top to bottom was as important, because there wasn't a guy, when you're taking your gear off on Saturday night, that didn't feel that they had contributed over the course of that weekend, and that's how it builds.
Can you speak to, in particular, on that penalty kill, since that's what's nearest and dearest to your heart? Travis Hamonic breaks his stick early in the penalty kill. And he's out there for the entirety of the 2 minutes playing without a stick and defending as well. How difficult is it, particularly for a defenseman in that situation, and how exhausting is it to play without a stick for as long as he did?
Well, normally the tendency would be for a forward to give a D that stick. And we talked at length about whether in a 4-on-3 situation or a 5-on-3 situation that the forward should not give up his stick to the D, because the forward is more traversing to do at the top, and that top seam pass, you know, it is a real challenge. And there's no right answer to it. Mm-hmm. It's not given up. He plays without it the whole time. The other thought is, if a forward doesn't have it, he may be closer to the bench and he may be able to grab it, you know, in that case, because that's the home bench. But just, you know that shot is coming. And you know, if I'm a smart penalty killer, I'm not getting anywhere near him where he can grab me or get a hold of me. And so they kind of kept their distance. But boy, oh boy, you're one of those blocking guys that they wheel out in front of the net, those statues that they wheel out in practice so they can shoot around that guy. That's what you are at that point. And that puck is coming, and it's coming off that side as well because the smart team is working against you. It's a helpless feeling. But Travis Hamonic battled the whole way through.
And to have done it after blocking, you know, getting a puck in the throat in the game on Friday, I mean, is that still in your mind, or are you going on adrenaline?
No, it's not still in your mind. You're going on adrenaline. And, you know, even that game on Friday night, to battle back the way they did, you know, you look at the two goals it scored against. One is off a throat, the other is off a face. And you're like, you know, in both cases, the puck lands right back on a Ranger stick and it's in the net. And, you know, from a defender standpoint, you're saying, you've got to be kidding me right now. Like, this is ridiculous that this is happening. And then to battle back and get the late goal, and then, of course, the overtime winner, it makes all of that stuff, you know, you just that much sweeter.
How good was that power play Saturday, Pooley, against the best-rated penalty kill?
Yeah, I had watched that penalty kill in Montreal earlier in the week, guys, and they were really moving well as a group. They were really tight, and they were moving very, very well. Excuse me. And you know, so you've had the benefit of just watching it. You've just watched tape, and they picked a couple things to exploit, but they were sharp. And just the way they move the puck. And you can tell when a power play starts, you can tell where the focus is in the first couple passes. If it's tight and it's snapping, you think, okay, we're going to be okay tonight. And if it's a little bit casual and the passes aren't quite as hard and they think they've got a full 2 minutes to score, it's not. But on all cylinders, that was clicking.
I know you touched on Tkachuk, particularly on Friday night and his performance. And the fight, I think... My read on it is, and judging by the comments afterward, that was more Jacob Trouba looking for something, and Tkachuk was like, okay, I guess, if you want to. I'm not picking my spots here. Absolutely. What is the theater like? We all talk about MSG, the most self-described, most famous arena in the world, all that, and you're at center ice and everything else. And you got the two captains and yada, yada, yada. Like, kind of describe the theater of that moment as you would sort of feel like it if you were a player.
Well, it's different in that building to start with, and it used to annoy me greatly because they weren't even very good at the start of my career up there, and yet you went in there and you thought they were the best team in the world by the way their fans acted. The fans would be strutting in before the game, and you'd be looking at them and go, you do know you're in second last place, right? Like, you understand that, right? But then they wouldn't even stay long enough to let you enjoy it because they'd leave halfway through the third period, so you didn't even get the last laugh because they were gone. But I don't think there's a building like it with the history. And you're just walking in and all the pictures on the walls and, you know, all the star level of that building. And then you're at center ice and you're Brady. And I think that was Trouba as well, who's, you know, he got involved in the next game that they played as well. And was incredibly frustrated through the game. I think he's frustrated with his teammates, guys. And, you know, he's wearing the C and it's not going well there for a team that was picked to do very well. But... that's Brady's moment. Brady, if you're going to say, where's Brady going to be? It's going to be center ice at Madison Square Garden. It just is. And the big smile and the relishing it and enjoying it and even taking the fight, that's captain to captain. That's mano a mano. And, you know, and that's an elevator. The danger in Trouba is that, you know, he's beaten up a lot of guys. He's not beating up Brady Tkachuk. I mean, Brady handled himself very, very well.
And after it was over, Tkachuk, turned to his bench, and that was a long moment in which he's looking to the bench. Now, I never saw a shot of whether he mouthed something, whether he was smiling, whether he was like a come on, but you're on the bench in that moment. What's that like?
Well, I happen to be on the bench in a lot of those moments, JR, because we were involved, you know, and that's a pick-me-up, but that's even different because that's your leader and that's your guy doing it, and I think it's probably more so now because it happens so infrequently. And, you know, we sometimes got to enjoy that three or four times a game, you know, JR, whereas now, you know, you might get that once every 10 games or not even. But even that's a different moment again in a really tight game between two teams that have just played, between two captains on a Friday night in Madison Square Garden. For all those moments, it's bigger.
What's the relevance also that your best player is doing it?
Well, he's doing everything. I mean, and that's the pressure. And the best way to lead, you can talk about locker room speeches. You can talk about anything you want. The best way for a captain to be a captain is to play. And if he goes out and plays like that every shift, how do you look at him, you know, walking by him on the way for a coffee before the game or in the training room after the game? And how can you not demand it of yourself? And I think that's the sort of the miss. Cue on leadership is, you know, what do you say or, you know, team meetings or any of that stuff. And I don't think it's any of that stuff. I think it's playing. And right now, Brady Tkachuk is playing at a very high level.
Four wins in five. Do you feel like the Sens have turned some sort of corner? Or is this just, you know, they're getting some real good play, especially from their top players. And, you know, there's still a wait and see.
No, I think they've turned a corner because of the number of individuals involved and the way things are happening. The timely goals, the, you know, a last-minute goal, a goal right after a huge penalty kill. Who is scoring those goals? There's a variety of people involved in the offense. And you've got to have your big scoring, but you've got to have everybody involved. And I think the number of people involved is the key element here. It's not just one guy that's carrying this team now. It's different people scoring big goals at different times. The goaltending tandem seems to be filling in a little bit. I like the fact that both guys got wins on the weekend. I think that's encouraging. And, you know, and now in your first little set of games, because we talked about the schedule, it's kind of, you know, there's home and home with the Rangers, and you got a couple home games, and you got a couple road games, and you're back for a couple home games. And all these little sequences, you've split the first one, and that was a tough one against the Rangers, and now you go to work. But I think you've turned a little bit of corner. Now you're also looking, and we talked about staying in the moment. You're looking at getting one game closer to 500, and that's the shortest-term goal that's attainable, is to get to 500.
Hopefully the rhythm of the power play and the goaltending Pooley helps in a busy month. Thoughts on Erik Karlsson? First time I saw him live, he's much better this year, but how would you compare Erik Karlsson, what we see now, to where he was in 2017?
Well, it's much closer than it's been. I'm not sure that you'll ever get to that just because of 5 years of youth and what his tank was at that point and how long he could go. And that playoff run that we saw, I'm not sure if that can be replicated, but he's much closer. And you saw him live, correct, Simmer?
Yeah.
Because that's a much better view of how well he's skating and where he's going on the ice. Because a lot of times he's off camera and he's going to places that it's just really hard to defend. It looked like he was thinking really well. And, you know, and I watched him closely as well. And it's funny, when you're doing color, you got to catch yourself, guys, because sometimes you'll start watching a player and you'll forget what you're doing. Like, you kind of forget that your job is to actually call the game and not just watch one player that you like to watch. And because I like to watch guys off the puck, and I like to watch what's happening and how teams are thinking about where they are. And right now, if he's off the puck, you've got to know where he is. But he's skating as well as he has since that time, Simmer. I'm not sure that that time will be replicated.
Mm-hmm. LA Kings are coming to town tomorrow. The Sens beat just over a week ago. They're goaltending collectively, including Cal Peterson, who's now been sent down to the minors, is the worst in the National Hockey League. But they're not alone. You've got Jacob Markstrom in Calgary. Jack Campbell has lost the number one job in Edmonton. Demko wasn't very good, and now he's hurt. And that's just starting in the West, let alone Shesterkin has been, I can't use the word he used to describe his game, with the Rangers overall this season. Why do you think that so many, especially top goalies, are really seemingly struggling this season?
I think it's the offense and the ability of the offense, and we've talked about the lateral pass a lot and the way that is forcing a goalie to move to a whole different degree. And I know it's very frustrating for coaches because they like to get the pucks on net, and they like to start the play by getting the puck on the net and getting a retrieval. But players right now, guys, if they're given an option, it's a bullet seam pass across the ice, full width to the ice, and then a bullet shot. And I think the pressure that's putting on these goaltenders – physically and mentally is really causing a strain on them. I really do. And, you know, each time something happens in the game, then people adjust. And now there's more focus on, already I'm watching, there's more focus on taking away the cross-ice seam pass and, you know, taking away that flank on the power play that causes you to move absolutely from wall to wall. If you want to get to the flank, you've got to go across the top. And that gives the goalie time to essentially make two moves, one to the top and then one over to the far side. But I just think it's the speed with which that pass is made across that's really, if you watch the goals that go in like that, these goalies are having to work way harder. And I think it's taking a physical toll on them as well.
Do you think Dorion will get a lot of calls on Talbot leading up to the deadline?
Yeah, that'll be a good one. It probably depends on exactly where they are. Because he's, you know, a perfect 1A2. I mean, if a team is looking for that, looking for some insurance going in the playoffs. But I think it depends on what Ottawa is and how much they've discussed about the future. And, you know, if this is a tandem they like to roll with for another year or two. And, you know, Cam Talbot's situation, if he were given an opportunity even to stay for another year, he may choose to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because it doesn't – well, nobody in the minors is ready right now, Pooley. I'm assuming it would take more than a year. Would you give him a couple of years if he wanted it?
I might look at two, Simmer. You know, I haven't delved into that very hard, but I might look at two. If this continues to go like it does and lets you develop your goaltenders at your pace and gives you a pair up top that are both capable of winning, and Cam Talbot came into it a little bit later, so the mileage from the front end wasn't as high as some guys are. You know, he didn't start his pro career at 19 or 20. And so I might look at that, yes.
Mm. Reports out of Vancouver suggest that Brock Besser, through his agent, have been given the option of shopping himself around to see if there's a trade there. What do you think of this? Not necessarily with the Sens, because I don't know that there's a fit there, but what do you think about the state of his game? And you have to combine that, obviously, with the contract. It's still got two more years at $6.5 million a year left on it.
Brock Besser needs someone to play with. I mean, I think he's a goal scorer that's more of a finisher than he is a creator. And you know, he hit his peak literally in his first year of his career. But I think you're talking more 20. I don't think you're talking 30 or 40. I just don't. It looked like when he started that this was going to be an electric 40-goal scorer. But whether he's not getting to the same places he did or whether he's not getting the same deliveries that he was at that point, you know, I think you're a low mid-20s goal scorer is what he is that, you know, does his damage when he's receiving a pass more than he does creating it for himself. So that's a pretty high price tag with a handful of years left. And the surprising thing is when you go to an agent like that, and apparently, you know, I mean, you don't know what you're hearing, but you're hearing that the coach wasn't aware of it, or he at least said he wasn't aware of it. It's a little bit unusual to go to an agent like that this early in the process, if it in fact is this early in the process, because an agent will, you know, will demand a trade. And, you know, we've been in a situation where you look and go, okay, you know, what exactly are you demanding? Because what you think of your client and what he's capable of getting back, we're not giving him away. And you keep telling us that there's people that want him, and you tell us where we're going with it. And that seems a little unusual with a player that's only 25 years old and is, you know, he's produced at a good level, the National Hockey League, but that seems a little unusual to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're trying to humble him, Pooley. I said the same thing. I think it is Ben Hankinson. In this case as well, do you look at this player for both, maybe physically, but obviously personally with the loss of his father, that some clubs might look into one-for-one, that this is a guy that just needs a fresh start?
Yeah, it could very well be. It could be. And, you know, he just burst onto the scene with such a loud bang 5 or 6 years ago, and it simply hasn't followed up with him. So with everything that has happened, you know, to him, and then you can't, you know, with the issues that you just talked about, Simmer, you can't disqualify that a lot of those happened during the pandemic as well. And while the pandemic affected everyone, it affected some who dealt with personal issues a lot more.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. Appreciate the time. As always, what's your TV schedule this week?
I've got Sens tomorrow night.
Okay.
I've got all studio this week, so it's a good one.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate the time as always. We'll chat again on Wednesday.